This is Poured Over, a show about stories presented by the booksellers of Barnes & Noble.
Hello, I'm Kat Sarfis, a bookseller at Barnes & Noble. Today, we are joined by the brilliant Elaine Yu Cho. Elaine has an MFA in flute performance from Cal Arts and has worked for several arts nonprofits. She's also a film critic for Media Diversity and a former bookseller at Elliott Bay. Ocean's Godore is her stunning debut, a big-hearted Korean space opera about a disgraced space pilot struggling to find her place. You've got space, murder, romance. This book is both epic and fun, a thrilling adventure across the solar and one you won't want to miss. Elaine, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Okay, you're writing this book. It's your debut. It's fantastic. What was the spark that led you to this story? How did it all start?
I suppose if we're going right, like all the way back to the spark, I would say, it was reading Three Body Problem by Zixin Liu, which is not enough.
I was going to say,
Yeah, totally. The timing couldn't be better. Translated by Ken Liu, I read it and it was, I think for me, the first sci-fi that I had read from a non-Western perspective. It was kind of a moment of like, oh, actually, like, this is what the future can look like. And that opened the doors for me to explore like sci-fi written by Asian American authors like Ted Chiang and Charles Yu, but also more translated sci-fi by Zixin or by Hao Jingfang. I think that year, too, was the first time Kim Bo-young, who's this amazing Korean sci-fi writer, had been translated. And as I was reading more and as I was like hungering for more, it was just a very cliche thing of like, well, why not write what you want to read?
Of course. You have to let, why not make that space? 100%. I love it. And I love how Korea is in this book is sort of like they are the dominating power. They have sort of, again, this is not so much a spoiler. It happens early on. But so they've kind of, you know, rejoined and they are the space, like they are leading in this sort of this new world. How did you get there? What were you, like the alliance? What was your inspiration for that?
I definitely, from the beginning, wanted to write from the perspective of like, what if Koreans led space? Like, what would that look like? What would the language be like? What food would they eat? It was funny because I think around the time that I wrote this, or maybe a little bit after, the movie Space Sweepers came out, which is like the first big like Korean sci-fi movie. But what was funny to me was even there, like the Korean like space crew is kind of the underdog ragtag team. Like it's still very much dominated by Western presence. And I not only wanted to write a sci-fi from a Korean, like through a Korean lens, but also wanted to use the genre to explore ideas of my Korean American identity and like look into that and reframe it in this sense. So that was kind of the main reason for that and why I got into that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I want to get into the characters, but now that when you were talking about identity, I think that there are a lot of like clashes over tradition, technology. I love that you ask these questions, like, what do we owe our past? Again, what you were saying, honoring your identity, whatever that is. There's this line early on, and it says, to turn your back on the past is to be uncertain of your footing in the future. And I dog-eared that page, which I never do. can you talk about those themes and, you know, what you hope readers take away from this story?
Yeah, I think a lot of the characters, but definitely the three main characters, are struggling with this idea of coming from different, very storied cultures that have gone on for generations and wanting very much to be a part of that, but also at the same time feeling rejected from it in certain ways. And they're trying to figure out who they are in the face of that and also like how to retain their sense of self going forward. Haven and Ocean in particular, I created as sort of foils for one another. They're both coming from these generations of cultures that have very like traditional customs, traditional ways of looking at things and have different relationships to that and are both kind of turned away from that for different reasons and are also both trying to get back to it. And their journey is kind of the arc of the book. Ocean in particular, I wanted her to start out in a place where she's asking the question, like, I'm Korean, so what does that mean for me? Am I Korean enough? And to go on this arc where she ends up realizing, like, no, I actually am Korean. So what does that mean for the definition of the word itself, rather than like me having to change for it?
Yeah, it's amazing to see. But yeah, those three characters in particular, again, like what you were saying, it's they are going through similar journeys, even though their backgrounds are so vastly different. And it kind of is, you know, it in that sense, you can pull anybody in. Anyone who's reading this can kind of, I think anyone can kind of see themselves in this book, which is just really moving. And I think that's part of the reason why, for me at least, it was kind of like an intoxicating read. Like you get pulled in like right away. And you know, for you're first obviously introducing these characters, and then, you know, the action starts and like, forget it, like you're done. it's wild. But so speaking of these characters, so obviously we've got Ocean, we've got Haven, and I'm going to say Tio. That's why I know this is his nickname. But, you know, you've also got these secondary characters, Maggie and Vaughn and Kent, and you got the Raiders and all of them. And so you've assembled this amazing cast of characters. So how did, aside from, you know, our central focus is, these sort of amazing secondary characters, how did they all come to life?
I think, honestly, I'm always wanting and trying to write a heist novel. So it's kind of like assembling a crack team, you know? Mm. And a lot of them were, it wasn't necessarily I thought of like, oh, I need a thief, I need like a lockpick, you know, that kind of thing. But thinking more about the relationships first, like the central, like two people that I thought of first were Ocean and Tao, and their relationship was what I wanted, like going into it, the sort of platonic, almost codependent thing that was complicated and really fun to explore. And that's kind of how the other secondary characters developed, like who I needed in the team skills-wise, because they're like so varied in terms of that, but also like what they provide for each other emotionally.
Yeah. No, I think I always, when I'm reading, especially when there's like a huge cast of characters, I always want to think like who would get their spinoff. And funny enough, not that it's a spinoff, but one character does get a little bit at the end of the book. If you, I always tell telling people like at the very end,
oh, yeah.
You have a little glossary. That happens to be written by one of these ragtag or whatever you have, crew members. Yeah. So how did that come about? So it was like not necessarily a spinoff, but Maggie gets a little moment to explain the ins and outs of the Alliance, explain to readers. And I loved it. Honestly, I actually read that first. And then kind of it was interesting then to like go back and then kind of reference it all. But I love when authors kind of invite us to stay, what I say, like stay and understand that the worlds that they've built a little bit more. And then again, giving one of your side, well, not when I hate saying side characters, but a secondary character, a little bit more time to shine. So how did Maggie's glossary of Alliance parlance, how did that happen? What made you just, and again, I know that with sci-fi, there's a lot of glossaries and, you know, sometimes they'll do like a dictionary of terms and whatnot.
Yeah. So it's not
so uncommon, but I love the fact that this came from a character's perspective.
Yeah, the glossary itself wasn't in the original book. When we were submitting to publishing houses, my agent was like maybe we should have a, like maybe we should send out a glossary with this. And I was like, okay, yeah, like let me fiddle around with it and see what comes up. And I tried writing it, and it felt way too dry to just be like, this word means this, you know, that kind of thing. And before I knew it, it was kind of like a writing exercise that took on its own life. Yeah. And part of it was to, originally when I wrote the book, there were multiple POVs, and I was always very sad to lose Maggie's voice because she was so fun to write from. And she was perfect because I wanted the glossary to be sort of a very welcoming vibe and like to still live in this world and create a glossary that would make sense in this universe. Like, why would we have this? Oh, yeah, of course. Like Maggie would be like, let me like show you into the Alliance and help you from looking completely like, you know, nincompoopish, you know.
She is helping. No, I feel like she is helping us as readers, but I love that it was a very like in-world experience, because even like, I think you started like, welcome to the Alliance. Like now that you've signed on, I'm like, have I signed on? I guess I have. So I love that. I love that it was helpful, but also, again, just another few moments for us to kind of live in this world and to have Maggie's voice, which is, again, so funny. And I do feel like she was the perfect person to write this after having read, again, I read this first, but after having read the book, being, oh, okay, this is definitely the character to be like, I'm going to show you the ropes.
Let's yeah.
go. And give you like the dirty of it all. And so I just thought that was so great. Speaking of, glossaries and all these wonderful things that we have in our sci-fi fantasy books to help us sort of understand these vast worlds. Right now, science fiction fantasy, I think, is kind of on top. I think we love the escapism of it. I think we just love the worlds that are created and we're able to sort of live in momentarily. Of course, it's romanticy. That's kind of like what's everyone's talking about and kind of like on everyone's mind. So I have to have, I'm going to ask your help here. You have a pitch for all those romanticy readers on why they should give space opera a try.
Space opera is the perfect segue because you've got these epic sweeping like settings. You get to go on these grand adventures with friends, but it's juxtaposed with these really introspective deep dives into characters, which I think is perfect for romanticy because you want that fun and that big adventure, but you also like really want to get into the hearts of the characters.
Exactly. And there's romance too. We can have romance in space.
Yeah. I think people are often intimidated by like the word sci-fi, or I really think it's unfortunate that there's a descriptor, the actual descriptor, hard sci-fi, which is like a tour de force of anti-hype. Like who wants to get into that if they're not like, you know, but honestly, like just like fantasy and just like romance, there's a whole range of things. Like, you know, if you want to dip your toes into it, there's books for you. Or if you want like hard sci-fi is honestly like the Tolkien of fantasy, right? Yeah. Like it's just getting into the details and people like figuring out the language and how things work specifically.
I love it. I love it. So I think we're hopefully have converted some readers to go on that we're going to say here, space opera. This is where you need to be. This is the next big thing.
Yeah. Come join us.
It's wonderful here. It's a space opera. And I like to, you know, think of that word. And it, again, there's the drama right there. It's like just in the description, it's all there. And I love how reading this, there were a ton of like sci-fi pop culture references that I hope everyone catches. I definitely caught a few of them. Maybe I missed a few, I'm sure. But I'm just going to say like early on, because again, we don't give too many spoilers, but I think what did I light up first? Oh yes. After seeing the name Adama, that was number one. I was like, what are you doing? And then there was a nod not too soon after to Amrish Puri. And then there was some Shakespeare in there. So I really feel like you were kind of giving us a little bit of everything. So who and or what inspires you creatively?
I feel like I'm just a trench coat full of pop culture references. Like you open it, that's like all it is. But definitely a lot of those are movies and shows, right? Like even at the very first chapter, I think there's like a drive-by like food cart kind of thing that comes to the window. That was also a little nod to Fifth Element with the noodle boat, which is like the definition of space opera. You've got a blue alien speaking, singing in space. So there's that. I think honestly, like you can't help but be unconsciously influenced by a lot of visual things like sci-fi, especially we've built up this visual vocabulary in the past, like couple decades. Like you watch Blade Runner, you watch Akira, you play Final Fantasy. It just kind of like melts into your writing, and which is nice because you almost have this thing to build upon or like to nudge people who are in the know.
Cemetery Venus. So you've got all these, these like, again, sci-fi pop culture references. And then I feel like you kind of created your own, like you've taken. So Cemetery Venus, which again, is this sort of, to me was like, and I'm going to ask you, was it like your Firefly? Was it your Battlestar Galactica? Like it's this, this program, this television show that they all sort of gather to watch. And that's what it felt like to me, that those like epic dramas that were having to play out in space. And that was a lot of fun to kind of read and just to see the excitement and how they like gather around just like normal people to watch the show and how they won't. I love that you're like, they won't skip ahead because you don't want to skip ahead on your friends and like watch a show without them. So what was that? What was your inspiration for Cemetery Venus? Was it a little Firefly? Was it a little Battlestar Galactica?
It was definitely a little bit of that. And just this idea of like a communal, like getting together and watching things with your friends and experiencing it together. Definitely a little bit of like the K-dramas, like they get together and do like their face packs while they're watching and eat, you know? So there was definitely that sort of like, you got to watch it with your friends and no spoilers. Like, and even if there was a cliffhanger, you got to wait and watch it with your friends. Like, that's a loyal thing to do. You
know? I love it. No, I love it that they did. I was reading. I'm like, are they putting on face masks? Like, they're literally, like, it's a whole thing. And it was so, again, like, yes, we're in space, but it's like, we're also human. So like, this is what we would do. And I love that. So you've got your pop culture references. You've got your own that you're creating, your Cemetery of Venus. So are there any other like movies, shows that to you, again, have just been like they were sort of like those scenes playing in your head? Like you said a little bit about like the Blade Runner and, you know, or Fifth Element, you know, that sort of like cart scene. Were there any other scenes that like you couldn't help it? Like they were just sort of playing in your head as you were writing this book?
Definitely Cowboy Bebop is a big one. That not only like the visuals, but also the vibe. It's got like such cool vibes married with this very nostalgic feeling.
Yeah.
Which is great. And oh, another one. There's this anime called Initial D. I don't know if you've ever watched it, but it's about the underground street racing scene in Japan. There's a scene early on in the book where Ocean races her ship and it says that she's going too fast, so the ship starts like beeping at her. That's a direct reference to the Toyota Tereno, which would give like a little chime if you went over a certain speed, because it would be like, this is like way above the speed limit of anything in Japan. So that was a reference to that.
No, but she kind of is like, she's drifting. I mean, yeah. And even again, this all happens. This is pretty early. Like even when she's on like a hoverboard and she's kind of like, again, she tells you flat out, like, this is a low grade model. This is not like she's working with like not the greatest equipment, but she is this like sort of racer and she's able to sort of feel the bike and know her path. And it's very exciting. And I think, I was thinking that I was like, oh my gosh, I can imagine it's so cinematic. And so I couldn't help but imagine, you know, what like there were scenes playing in your head. And then as you're sort of like adding to this sort of amazing tradition of action sequences in science fiction, particularly in this sort of more dramatic science fiction genre. Very, very cool. So not to be greedy, but you did leave us on a bit of a cliffhanger. And so I know that you've just gifted us this amazing novel, but I'm going to ask what's next for you or what's next for Ocean, whichever you'd like to give us. And I know that this is the start of a series.
I don't know if I can. I am working on more.
Okay. Okay.
In this world. Yes.
You don't have to tell us how many. Just that there is more coming.
I am working on more. It's in the works. I don't know how much I can say about that. I felt really bad about that ending. If it were up to me, like I would not, you know, I understand the feelings around it. But yes, I know that there has been interest in hearing what's next. I am also interested to share that.
That's a very diplomatic answer. Yeah. I don't mind. I feel like there's a lot of, you know, with books, I mean, even in other media about really like the ending that the readers want versus sort of, or what you feel the readers want versus the ending that like, you know, you need to tell. So I'm always, even if I'm like, oh, I kind of always think about that. Like, this is the author's journey. Like, this is the story. We don't know what's going to happen. This is the arc. This is what's happening. So yeah, how now, since you brought it up, I guess I brought it up, when you were writing it, what were your emotions going through? Like when you were kind of reaching those, you know, those beats and knowing that you were sort of coming to the, at least the conclusion of Ocean Dodori.
Oh God, I don't know how much I can say.
Pace yourself.
Yes, I guess I will say I sat down to write this and I had no plans to publish it or anything. It was just very much like, this seems like a fun story that I would like to write for myself. And I think it was only near the end of it that I was like, well, maybe other people will want to read it too. And it was tricky because what I had planned out was indeed longer. It was a big question of, well, I didn't have an agent. I was very untested. And what I did send out, that this book, a lot of people wouldn't even look at because I was untested or it was too long on its own. And once we sold it, it was very much trying to figure out the arc. Like making an arc makes sense within that book. And I had always thought of it as like, well, it's like a first season of a TV show and we'll make it as good as we can. And if it gets picked up, like, that's great. There's so much more to write and to do. But if not, like, I just want to make a good story too that stands on its own. And there were a lot of beats that I had wanted and thought about going into it. Like the grocery store scene was one of the first scenes that I thought of. And then there's a bridge scene later. Those were like two of the big scenes that were in my head when I first started writing the book. So it was exciting just having those come to fruition, I think, yeah. And then seeing how everything else played out.
Well, I think it's going to get picked up. I mean, alone, this cover is stunning. For those of you who are not watching, you'll just have to pick up the book. But the cover, honestly, I think it's so dynamic. It's kind of cinematic in itself. Like it almost could be, I feel like it could be like a movie poster. It's just beautiful. It tells its story all its own. You kind of know exactly what you're getting into, which is a wonderful space adventure. But I don't know how, I know authors don't always have like input into their Ooh. Covers. Was this something? Oh, and now this is my like dog-eared arc. It's like all like, just bent out of shape.
I love that so much.
Beautiful finished product. So what did that, like, yeah, when you saw that cover,
yes.
I mean, like, did it, because to me, you know, reading this book, and I feel like that cover translates. It's just like, this is the vision. Did you feel that when you saw it, where you're like, yeah, this is all those scenes, you know, ideas that I had, now it's like in a package. Is that how you felt?
Yeah, I'm so happy you asked me because I love talking about this. I love the cover so much. So this cover, I mean, not only it's beautiful, it's almost like the old like space propaganda posters. Yep. It's by an artist named Chiuk Choi, who I followed for years. And like months before they even asked me, like Xando even asked me about the cover, I like very shyly slid over a portfolio of like, you know, totally unprompted. I was like, these are Korean illustrators and Korean American like artists that I really like. Here's like their work. Check out their websites, you know, if they've done book covers before. And Chiuk Choi was my favorite by far. And Xando, to their credit, was just like, yeah, cool. Like, we'll get in contact with her, which was amazing. And she's Korean. So they sent over like, you know, the story beats. But they're like, she really wants to get a sense of your writing. So they asked me to translate one of the chapters into Korean. My editor chose that first race scene.
Yes.
Yeah. So I was like, my Korean is not like nearly good enough. So I employed my mom. So she like translated the bulk of it. And I helped her because obviously, her Korean and English are great, but she's not very familiar with sci-fi terms. And then there were a couple of things that, like, she just translated very literally. Like, one of them was like, oh, I don't want to get into, like, Captain Song's latest pissing match. And she just, like, very literally translated. I was like, oh my, like, you know what that means? So was that. Oh. Yeah. And then we enlisted my younger sister, who like watches a lot of Korean variety shows, and she had like a really good ear for dialogue. So it was kind of like a family endeavor, and we sent that over to Chiuk Choi, and she came out with this beautiful cover, and I saw it, and I was like, I hope that what I write lives up to this like cover, so it's so, because it's so good.
It is, and I love that it was like a family affair, but also yeah. like this like labor of like this love of like the artist and bringing them in. Like that is, I love that story. That's amazing. And no, I think the cover, I mean, there's a lot of covers, you know, you see and you're kind of, you know, they're intriguing. They tell you a little bit about it, but this one, it's so vibrant. And even just the color palette, like, I feel like you're going to see this book from across the store and it's going to drag you right in. And it's amazing. And the fact that this is an artist who really listened to your story. And again, what you were trying to say, and I love that it was, I almost wish that there had been like that you did send over that literal translation, because I can only imagine what might've been added to this cover, yeah. But it's perfect. And I love that. I love when there's sort of like author and like there's sort of that personal touch to it. It just, it kind of makes the package just like so wonderful. All right, we're gonna wrap up a little bit. And I love to ask this question because I, you know, when I'm talking to not only brilliant women, but also booksellers, as you were. So I love to ask, what are you reading now? Or what was the last book that you couldn't stop talking about?
I love talking about books. So I just started two books. One of them is Green Frog by Gina Chung, collection of short stories. It's beautiful, it's amazing. And then the other one is Catherine Arden's latest.
The warm hands. Yes. The warm hands of ghosts. Yes, I think I'm yes, saying that correctly. One. Yes. Yes.
Which so, I'm also loving.
Yeah, that one was, I felt like it's different, but also perfect. Like in just, yeah. it's talking about like fantasy. It's a little bit more, I hate paranormal. I say this and I think people look at me like paranormal, but it's, you know, there's
yeah.
a bit of a ghost story, but so good. And I'm so interested in Green Frogs. Is that what you were?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, Elaine, thank you for this epic adventure. I can't wait for everyone to pick this book up. Oceans Godoy is out now. Don't miss it. It's amazing. Jump on the space opera train. Right?
Come join us. Yeah.
Come join us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kat.
Thank you for listening. Poured Over is a Barnes & Noble production. To help other readers find us, please rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts.